In the new film Chicago, Queen Latifah plays the tough prison matron Mama, who does favors for her female prisoners in return for their intimate friendship and cold cash.
Ask any of the chickies in my pen. They'll tell you I'm the biggest mother hen. I love them all and all of them love me. Because the system works, the system called reciprocity. Got a little motto, always sees me through. When you're good to mama, mama's good to you. One for mama, she'll do one for you. They say that life is tit for tat, and that's the way I live. So I deserve a lot of tat for what I've got to give. Don't you know that this hand washes that one too? When you're good to mama, mama's good.
That's Queen Latifah from the soundtrack of the new film, Chicago. Her performance earned her a Golden Globe Best Actress nomination. She also has a new album, a collection of hits released in December called She's a Queen. Queen Latifah's first CD in 1989 established her image as an Afrocentric independent woman who didn't like the misogynistic bent of some fellow rappers. The strength that she portrays in her music has carried over into her roles on TV and in the movies. She was one of the stars of the Fox sitcom Living Single and has co-starred in the movies Brown Sugar, Juice, Set It Off, and Living Out Loud. Terry spoke with Queen Latifah in 1999 after the publication of her autobiography, Ladies First. Let's start with a tune from her 1994 Grammy Award-winning record, Unity.
U-N-I-T-Y, U-N-I-T-Y, that's a unity. U-N-I-T-Y, love a black man from in Philly to
Winston. Who you calling
in
the pitch?
Another flow. Every time I hear a brother call a girl a bitch or a hoe, trying to make a sister feel low, you know all of that got to go. Now everybody knows there's exceptions to this rule. I don't be getting mad when we playing, it's cool. But don't you be calling me out my name. I bring crap to those who disrespect me like a dame. That's why I'm talking. One day I was walking down the block, I had my cut off shorts on right, cause it was crazy hot. I walked past these dudes when they passed me. One of them felt my booty, he was nasty. Yeah. I turned around red, somebody was catching the rat. Then the little one said,
yeah, me bitch.
And laughed. Since he was with his boys, he tried to break the fly. I punched him dead in his eyes.
Who you calling
the
bitch?
U-N-I-T-Y.
In this rap, you talk about what you don't like about bitch and hoe kind of language. Elaborate on that for me.
You know, honestly, the record was really made in response to, at the time, there were so many records coming out with, you know, rappers calling women, you know, bitch this, hoe that. And I just thought it was like getting out of control. It was becoming a bit too much. And I'm not saying that I don't, you know, use expletives when I'm hanging out with my friends, you know, and, you know, we may say some of those things, but we say it in joking. But when it's meant to be really derogatory, or to disrespect people constantly, you know, it just got to be too much. And so I felt like saying something about it, you know.
Did you feel that that language represented larger attitudes toward women in the music world or the rap world or among your friends?
Well, definitely. Some people use that word to apply to all women, you know. And it seems like the word, I mean, I could call a guy an MF, but it's not going to be as harsh as him calling me a bitch. There's a difference. It sounds worse and it feels worse. You know what I mean? So I felt like, you know, it's time somebody says something about it, because it's still out of control. It's still out of control, you know, but I think that helped bring awareness to it. And the record wasn't so much about the word bitch. The record was about, the first verse is about that, you know, the respecting a woman. The second verse is about abuse, a woman being beaten by her man and finding the strength to leave. And the third verse was about young girls, like, who wanted to be tough, wanted to be gangster bees, you know what I mean? I mean, the record was really about a lot of different things, and the point of the record was unity. Let's bring it all together. Let's put all that stupid stuff to the side, and let's be together, man. Let's stop pushing each other away from each other, and let's be down with each other.
Now, the first name that you rapped under was Princess of the Posse. How did you decide on that name for yourself?
No, Latifah was my name. The Princess of the Posse was just my little title, you know, because I was like the only girl in our crew. And Ramsey was kind of like, Ramsey and DJ Mark, the 45 King, were like the heads of the crew, you know, so to speak. They were like the heads of the crew, but I didn't go with either one of them, so I couldn't be like their girlfriends or anything like that. So I just took the little, I was like the little sister. So I took the princess title.
So what was it like being the only female in your posse?
I wasn't the only female, but I was the only female rapper. It felt good. I was, you know, I was cool with it, you know. And then all my friends, I introduced like a lot of my friends to the guys in my crew, and some of them hooked up with the guys in my crew. So it was like, it was cool. We had a big old family. We had a female DJ, this girl named Ginger G. She used to DJ. So she was the female DJ. I was the female rapper. And, you know, we had a couple of other people, you know, down with us, but that was it. And it was actually a good experience for me, because I got to be around guys and see how they think and what they do. And they could be natural around me. They didn't really hide anything, you know, in front of me, because it wasn't like I was their girlfriend, you know. So they didn't have to front and, you know, be phony or whatever. I learned a lot. And then I had them right there to help me practice. We all practiced around each other. We were writing, and we would bounce the rhymes off of each other to see what the other person thought and get constructive criticism. It was almost like a school for rap. It was real good.
How did you decide what you wanted your image to be?
I kind of just wanted it to not be like anybody else that was already out. So, you know, when the record company gave me some money to go shopping to take, you know, to get clothes and stuff for my promo pictures, you know, I didn't have a stylist, so they basically just gave me money to go shopping. So I went and bought, you know, a couple of outfits, you know, some stretch pants and a nice shirt or whatever, you know. But then I was walking down the street downtown in Newark called Halsey Street, and I passed this African store, and I had already decided my name was Queen Latifah by this point. And then I was looking at some of the clothing, and I liked the way that the pants were made. It was like a drawstring thing. It was beautiful embroidery. I saw this fabric, and I asked the lady, could she make me a suit, basically, you know, a shirt and some pants and a hat to match, like a crown. And she said she could do it, and she hooked it up for me, and it came out real cool. So I took my first promo pictures in it, and I was barefoot in these pictures, squatting with this African suit on. And it was like, whoa, who is this? You know, my look was just automatically different from then on.
It's good you had your clothes made, too, because you read in your book that you hated the full-sized women's shops. You didn't like the clothes in there.
Well, yeah, most of the time it's just some big, you know. I mean, things have gotten a lot nicer.
Uh-huh.
Since, you know, then I was, you know, that was like 10, 12 years ago or whatever. But, yeah, things have gotten, they've come a long way. You know, I still think that the bigger ladies need some really fly clothes to wear. Because most women that I know aren't just small women, you know. They need to have really nice things made for them so they can look just as beautiful as, you know, these little size sixes. It's all good. share the love.
You write that when you were growing up, you were uncomfortable with your body because you were big. Is that something you had to get over before you started performing, or had you already gotten over that?
Yeah, I basically had gotten over that by then. I mean, my initial concern wasn't because I was big, because I wasn't like big fat, you know. I was bigger than every other girl in the class.
You were playing basketball.
Yeah, I was like always the tallest girl in the class, always the biggest girl in the class, until like this other girl came to school named Shania, and I was so happy because she was bigger than me, and I didn't think it was possible, but I was so happy because she took the pressure off of me for a minute, which was nice. But it was like my breasts, you know, I developed, my family, the women in my family are pretty well endowed up top, so I got pretty well endowed pretty early in life. I was like 11 years old, popping up with these things, and I'm like, oh God, what do I do with this? What are you doing here? Why ye me? And then they just grew. So my friends would like tease me sometimes. They made me feel a little bit uncomfortable about it. But as I grew older, I grew to accept them. I grew to love my body, you know, and it was reinforced by certain people that I was involved with intimately. They loved it too, so I'm like, man, and now I love my breasts. This is the best thing in the world.
You know, you use your size on stage as power too.
Yeah, why not? I am statuesque. My stature goes right along with my personality.
You have been doing, you know, a lot of acting. You were the star of the TV series, Living Single. You've been in several movies, including Juice and Get It Off. Is that what it's called?
Set It Off.
Set It Off, yeah. I saw it.
Get It Off. What you thinking about over there? Set It Off.
Set It Off. And, Living Out Loud.
Mm-hmm.
When you got into acting, had you planned to get into acting?
Well, it was something that I always wanted to do.
Since you were a kid?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I acted in school plays and stuff. I never had any, like, really formal training, as in classes or anything like that. But I felt like I had a talent, you know, and I felt like it would be something good for me to do. And I wanted to do it because I never looked at myself like I'm the best rapper ever on the planet. And unless I could say that, then I would never be comfortable just being a rapper. I needed to diversify and have things to fall back on. So acting was definitely a passion that I wanted to pursue.
Your first movie was Juice, right?
My first movie was it Juice? Jungle Fever.
Oh, Jungle Fever. Okay, that was like a small role, very small role, right?
Yeah, one day.
Okay, and then in Juice you had a larger role, mm-hmm, as a DJ. So it was kind of pretty close to who you are.
Right.
You didn't have to, like, reinvent yourself completely.
No, exactly.
For that. Was that a good way to get started, you know, in a role that was pretty close to home?
Well, you know what? It was, I guess, in a way, but then it wasn't. You know, it was kind of like I got sick of playing what people thought Queen Latifah was in their scripts. Like, people would look at my image or who they thought I was, and then they'd write me in there, basically. But it wasn't me, you know? It wasn't me. I was much more rounded. Well, I was much more well-rounded than the linear characters that they kind of had me playing. And they were just like this remanufactured version of Queen Latifah. I was happy for the opportunity to be in a movie and kind of learn. So it was good learning some of those things without having to stretch too far from who I really am. But that's not something that can sustain you, and that's not something that can establish you as an actor. So I was dying for the role that was not me, that was not anything remotely like me, so that I could really show my skills, my talent.
What's the closest you've come to that, to a role that's not remotely like you?
Set It Off, Cleo.
And describe Cleo. Your character.
Cleo and Set It Off. She was basically orphaned at a young age. She had no one left, really, but her friends. Her friends were the most important thing, you know, in her life to her. She would die for them. She was a very strong but real tender on the inside. She was a lesbian. and in a monogamous relationship with someone, although she did like to flirt. And that was basically, she just really cared, you know, she kind of cursed a lot. She liked to drink and, you know, she liked to smoke her cigarettes. She was a little bit wild, but she was a very caring person. She really was really down for her friends, and that was like the bottom line.
Did you see a lot of homophobia surface after your performance?
No. You know, I didn't. People had love for that character. And that was what I really wanted to do. I wanted to make them really love her. You know, that character was so great and the script was so great for her because she got to really go all out for her friends. You had to love her. If you didn't care about her, then you needed to really examine your own emotions and your own feelings, because anybody who basically would say, look, you guys go, run, and take the heat, and knew she was going to take the heat, knew she was probably going to die, and knew she was going to meet her end, you know, but sacrificed herself so that her friends could try and, you know, could be freed like that. That's a true, true trooper. That's a true friend. And so I figured that there's, you know, if you don't have love for this girl by the time this movie is over, you're just twisted. So, I mean, basically, there's a scene in there where I kiss this girl. And I have yet to watch this scene because I can't watch it, you know, myself. I don't think I could just watch myself be intimate, period. It wasn't the fact that she was a girl, but it was the fact that just I'm kissing somebody on it. I can't watch me do that, I don't think. But it was kind of funny because I went and saw the movie like 8 times, you know, when it came out. And I would see it in regular theaters, like creep in and just sit in the back of the theater and watch the movie with a regular audience to see how they reacted. And every time that kissing scene came, people was like, ah, ew, ooh. You know, you could hear this big roar in the theater. But by the time that the end of the movie came, they were like cheering for the girls, like cheering for us to like get away to win, you know. So they couldn't remember, you know. It wasn't like their mind stayed focused on that one thing, you know, which was good for me.
So they're cheering or jeering, and you're turning your head from the screen at the same time because you don't want to watch yourself being intimate?
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah.
Queen Latifah plays the prison matron Mama in the new film Chicago.
Dana Owens, a.k.a. Queen Latifah. Yes, I'm here to testify. No, I got to speak on my behalf. You don't even know what happened. Can I just tell you what happened?
He had it coming.
He had it coming.
He only had himself to blame. If you'd have seen it, I think that you would have done the same.
I mean, imagine, why was he hitting this woman? Why was she taking that? Now picture her fighting back. Think of the ass kicking. Think of his ass flipping down the stairs. And me at the top smiling. He should have stopped wilding. Now could you picture me trying to finish him off? See why I picture me on this side of the law? Leave holes, you'd have thought I was gunning. Now the cops coming, I ain't running. Girl, you should have seen it. Should have bobbed and weaved it. Before the cops came, got a couple of clean hits. In word, the Jesus couldn't take the abuse. But I couldn't explain that to the state troops. But you know, girl.
Yeah, you go, girl.
Plus, I look real cute in orange jumpsuits. This is the story I'm telling, and I ain't changing nothing. I just needed you to know, Your Honor.
He had it coming.
He had it coming.
He only had himself to blame.
Queen Latifah with Lil' Kim and Macy Gray from the soundtrack of Chicago. Next Tuesday, Terry Gross will talk about the making of Chicago with the film's director and choreographer Rob Marshall, and also with Paul Bogave, who supervised and conducted the music. In the interest of full disclosure, he's my brother.